Polarization just keeps getting worse in Washington. It's as bad as they've ever seen it, and it seems to be making Americans very upset.
Impeach 45!
This is politics.
Impeach 45!
Is this where we want to set the bar for future presidents?
Clinton was the worst in history.
It was a vote along party lines that made President Clinton only the...
I'm not for gay marriage.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
And so does
Barack Obama nor I support
the
earth
flat
this
afternoon. Our limousine was set on fire downtown.
It's my
smoke
decision.
Could be seen
it's
for blocks
not
away.
Baby.
And protesters hurled trash cans and used flash bombs.
What's up? Welcome into episode number one of Bob and Weave. I am Bob Ruff.
And I'm Zach Weaver.
The Weave.
The Weave.
And before we get into today's content, we want to first kind of tell you who we are and what we're doing. I'm sure that a lot of you listening right now are Truth and Justice listeners and know both of us. For those of you that don't, I host the Truth and Justice podcast. It's a true crime podcast where we investigate wrongful conviction cases. And Zach is one of our co-hosts on the follow-up episodes of the Truth and Justice podcast.
Yes, sir. I sure am. So on top of co-hosting Truth and Justice, the Friday follow-ups, I'm also the host of the Made Us podcast.
That's right. And we have so all these podcasts, Truth and Justice, the follow-ups, Made Us, a couple others, The Root Note, Disgruntled Moms. Those are all podcasts out of our studios here, the NBI studios. And we kind of our mission statement here at NBI is to make podcasts that matter and to podcast with purpose. Mm-hmm. One of those two should be coined as a mission statement.
I like that.
Yeah. And we have a lot. Zach and I have a lot of conversations. We're both kind of, I won't say unique, but I mean, it seems if you scroll through social media, it seems unique in the fact that both of us are very much in the middle of a lot of things.
No, that's really true.
Yeah. We are both of us. I mean, I intentionally didn't ask you a lot of these questions. I just feel like I know this, but I can speak for myself and say that I don't identify with any political party. I consider myself very much an independent. And Zach, you consider yourself more of
a libertarian. I would go more libertarian if I had to identify as something. I guess if I really think about it, I probably don't identify too much, but I typically say libertarian. That's just kind of where I align with.
What does that mean to you?
That keeps the government out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
That allows me to make my decisions and go from there.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, have you always been that way?
Yeah, I've always been that way. I hate the government overreach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things that they're telling us what to do and what not to do that, you know, you should have your own moral compass and should be able to point yourself in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. I find myself, so a little history behind me. So we are based out of Southwest Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
People think Michigan, you think Detroit and Lansing and Ann Arbor and these very union heavy, Democrat heavy areas of the state. But most of Michigan is very rural, which is where we live. Our studio here is on 5 acres in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
And so in that climate, I've always grown up as a very right-wing Republican. As a young child through my adolescence and teen years, and even through my 20s and some of my 30s,
mm-hmm.
because that's just what I was always taught. Now, we were brought up differently, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Not entirely differently, but in the fact that I was brought up. So if I had to use two words to describe myself in this context, there are two words that will cause a lot of you to just shut the podcast off immediately. Please don't do that. Hear me out, because you heard me ask Zach when he said he's libertarian, and I said, what does that mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's very significant. So I am I would describe myself as being a conservative Christian.
Okay.
Click, right?
Bunch of people, that's a lot of stopping. Right.
But keep listening, because part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast is because those two terms have become so warped by the people who identify as them that they don't mean the same thing to me as they do other people, beginning with my faith as a Christian. So a lot of people have done a lot of very horrible things and said a lot of horrible things and continue to do so in the name of Christianity. what Christianity means to me, and it's something I don't take anything at face value. I do a lot of studying when it comes to anything. What it means to me is that I'm supposed to love everyone mm-hmm. and judge no one. Actually, so Zach also happens to be my tattoo artist.
Yep.
And that's actually a tattoo I have very large on my arm. It says, love everyone, judge no one. I believe the message of Christ when he came, that's what we're supposed to do. But people with a lot of other things, just like with a lot of other things, I should say, with Christianity, have taken that to mean, taken little things out of context in the Bible. And that goes whether you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Buddhist or whatever you are. It's really easy to pull out little pieces of that and say, mm-hmm. oh, I can judge you because you don't fill in the blank, or I can judge you because you do fill in the blank. I believe that we're just supposed to love everybody. So that's what it means to me. I feel like my relationship with God to me is I love everyone and I have compassion for people and I don't judge anyone. So that's what that means to me. I do feel very strongly about my faith, but not in the way you probably think. And when it comes to, and these are all things we're going to dig into in other episodes. Each episode is going to be topical about mm-hmm. certain controversial topics, and that certainly religion will be one of them. But Zach, so you and I differ very much when it comes to religion or faith.
Yeah, I'm very agnostic. Mm-hmm. Now, I grew up in a science-based household. Now, let me be clear. We're saying science, not Scientology, not Scientology. I grew up in a science-based household. We believe in science. My grandfather worked hand-in-hand with NASA. My grandfather also wrote the very first electronics manual for the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up with evidence, with proof.
Right.
And that's where I've always led with religion is I'm not anti-religion. I wouldn't say I'm atheist, but at the same point, show me the proof.
Right.
I'm right there with you. And I have no problem with anybody believing what they want to believe as long as it's not harming anybody else.
And that's the key to all of it. Mm-hmm. And we, to me, the word tolerance is another word that's been warped
yeah.
over the years to mean tolerance used to mean that you are open to or, and you can accept people for what they believe, even if they disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But tolerance seems to me, at least based on social media, has become I'm tolerant of you as long as you agree with me.
Yeah.
If you don't agree with and then it's turned into these ideas land in the tolerance box and mm-hmm. they're okay. They're safe over here. But these other ideas don't land in the tolerance box. And those boxes switched over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go back to the 40s, 50s, 60s, and something like gay marriage didn't live in that box.
No, not at all.
That was something that was okay for people to say, we don't tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tolerant, but not with that stuff over there. Now it's kind of switched to where it's like, well, no, that can come over here into the tolerance box, and we can tolerate that. And tolerance meaning rooting from tolerate. I think it's not a good description of it, but to say that this is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
This is an acceptable thing. Everyone can love everyone that does this. But now the people that don't like that live over here in this box where it's not tolerated.
Yeah. If you don't accept that now you're considered intolerant.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Instead of being tolerant. And it hasn't, you know, I mean, it's weird how that has changed. The safe spaces have changed. And that's a strange thing to say, just like you brought up.
Mm-hmm. You know, Bill Maher, I was just watching the other day. There was a clip of him talking or something he wrote. He said it's just really hard to be in America these days because the goalposts are always moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we see it a lot with, like, both of us are big fans of stand-up comedy,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, this is what's acceptable.
Yeah.
So people behave in that way. And then 10 years later, that's not acceptable anymore. And because you behaved in that way 10 years ago, now you're shunned.
Yep.
And these are, again, these are a little sample of some of the things we're going to get to in depth. I don't want to get into them too much now because we've got a lot to cover today. But getting back to, you know, kind of how I identify. So a good starting point here is for you all to realize what you just learned about Zach and I. We're very, very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to one of the big hot button issues, we're very far apart.
Yep.
I feel very strong about my Christian faith. Zach, it feels very strong about his, I guess, agnostic.
Yeah.
Agnosticism?
Whatever. I guess that's what it could be. Agnosticism?
Yeah. Whatever you call
yeah.
it. But we can still be buddies.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about, is being able to not just accept, but try to understand.
Yeah. And in my adult life, an interesting fact that's led me with this is being in the tattoo industry that is very left-wing, very liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am a competitive shooter, and I shoot at a high end. I'm actually considered a pro shooter.
Right.
Which is very right wing, mm-hmm. very conservative. And I get to see all of this back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it's really frustrating to not understand how these people cannot see from the middle, which is where I am.
Right.
You know, and you can see how each one of these sides have points, but they're not giving in to each other at all. And that's very disheartening.
It is. And what you just described is a lot of the reason why I consider myself independent. As I mm-hmm. said, I grew up believing that, you know, Republicans are great, Democrats are the devil. That's just not, it's not even like my parents. That's just how rural America, I think, in a large part feels.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got older and I hate to use the term woke because my kid tells me I'm too. Every time I say that, every time I say something, my kids would be like, Dad, that's very progressive. I was like, yeah, I'm woke AF. And they tell me I'm too old to say that. Also, I don't think it's entirely accurate.
You're a different kind of woke.
A different kind of woke, which was one of our working titles for this podcast.
It was, and I was really happy with it.
I was too.
But until someone really got us with a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Bob and Weave was sent to us by a listener, a comment that came mm-hmm. up with Bob and Weave. But luckily, I'm glad we put it out there because a few people said that would be offensive to some people.
Yeah, which I didn't think it would be, but...
But I don't understand, and that's what this is all about, right? It's understanding where every issue we tackle, we want to talk about both sides. We want people to understand that there are two sides to every argument, and most of the time, people are on both sides are trying to get to what they think is the greater good.
Yeah.
A lot of times you have the same end goal. Mm-hmm. It's you have a different way of thinking about how to get to that end goal. But somewhere along the line, we've lost the ability to communicate that and work together. So we're going to try to do, you know, we mentioned religion. I happen to be good friends with Rabia Chowdhury, who is one of the, she was on Serial. She's the, one of the hosts and creators of the Undisclosed podcast. Also happens to be Muslim. And Robbie and I are very, very close friends. And I told her, I said, man, it would be great when we want to do an episode on religion
mm-hmm.
to have you come in. So next time, you know, unfortunately, we don't live in the best part of the country for, you know, we don't live in LA where we get anybody we want, but we do live in a place where people pass through. We're not far from Chicago. So next time she's in Chicago, she's going to come here and we're going to have that conversation. And back to religion and how I identify myself. The other side of that was that I said conservative. And people think conservative, Republican, Trump, I hate you, and mm-hmm. shut off the podcast. But that's not at all what I see conservatism as is very not far away from what you're calling libertarianism, which is I just believe in a smaller government with less control over me. That's all I mean by conservatism is just simply that. And what's funny, what I find extremely hypocritical, let's take, you know, and that'll be a whole nother episode in and of itself. We'll probably have guests. You know, a lot of times we will have guests. Sometimes we won't, you know, mm-hmm. when we can get people in. But I think gay marriage makes this point the best. So a very right-wing Republican issue many times is that there should be no gay marriage.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a right-wing issue. Right-wing people are conservative. Conservatives are supposed to believe, by definition, what I believe, less government control. So I do have a very strong opinion on gay marriage, and I'm not even going to get into it now. I will at some other time. But before I even get to that opinion, as a conservative, I don't think gay marriage should be illegal because I don't think the government has any fucking business at all mm-hmm. legislating who I can marry
yep.
or who you can marry, who anybody else could.
One of the best things I ever heard about gay marriage, and we'll get into this later, is if you don't like gay marriage, don't get gay married.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's
just a stupid...
It's none of your damn business.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing I'm pretty good at is minding my own damn business.
One of the other things that I love, too, that I've heard, and I will repeat, is that I have no problem with gay marriage. I want people to get gay married. I want them to protect their marijuana plants with AR-15s.
Right, which is... so we both come from similar but different walks of life.
Yeah.
And for me, like I've had, I don't know, you said you're kind of libertarian now. Did you grow up that way or was that a shift for you as you got older?
It was probably a shift for me. I would say I grew up more Republican mm-hmm. just because of the area we live in. It's a very rural area.
Right.
That's kind of the way we grew up.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So we're similar there. And for me, it really when I started working in the criminal justice field, mm-hmm. I started working on wrongful convictions. And so number one, the first thing is it did is it expanded my circle of people that I'm connected to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was only connected to people here, around here, with similar likes and viewpoints.
Yeah.
Now I'm working on, you know, in a wrongful conviction case out of Texas. And I've recently filmed a television series. If it's not, it won't be out by the time you hear this. But I have a TV series coming out on Oxygen called, we think it's going to be called The Forgotten West Memphis 3. They're still messing with the title. But so I'm in LA and I'm in Memphis and I'm in Texas and I worked in Baltimore and I'm meeting people that are not, you know, I worked with the Undisclosed team, which, you know, it's Robbie and I always joke, it's a Jew, an atheist, and a Muslim made a podcast. And I jumped in as the Christian, as the fourth one, and the four of us, and we're all good friends and we love spending time together and we love working towards the same goal. But I expanded my horizons. Mm-hmm. Walking the streets of Baltimore opened my eyes up a little bit, you know? So as an example, for a lot of people that don't know any better, and this is what you got to understand. Some people, they're not being mean. They just don't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
You hear, say they're talking about stop and frisk laws.
Okay.
So in big cities where the police should be able to stop and frisk somebody and without any, really any probable cause. And, you know, the kind of right-wing view of that, the view I always had was, what's the fucking problem?
Yeah.
You know, if you're not doing anything illegal, you got nothing to worry about. Why are you worried about it? Until I went to Baltimore and I met some people that live in the streets of Baltimore, that live in those bad neighborhoods, people of color, people of different races and religions. Said, really? Have you ever gone for a walk with your girlfriend and had the police grab you and throw you against a wall and frisk you?
Yeah, that's rough.
Like, maybe I don't get arrested because I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
But do you want to, can you sit out? I was riding around with Saad Chowdhury, Robbie's brother. And he was showing me these certain neighborhoods where these blue lights flashing. They're cameras. And he's like, yeah, in these neighborhoods, the police are watching all the time. If two or more people, and they're mostly African-American in that neighborhood, gather together, sitting outside on the porch, standing out in front of their yard, the police are on them immediately.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
It's enlightening. It wasn't that I had any bad feelings or anything towards the people that lived in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't understand it until I got there and I looked at it. And that's when I understood, it's like, oh, like I'm the most privileged human being on the planet. I say it all the time. I'm a straight white Christian male in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Like I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no concept of, before I started getting into these other circles, I had no idea what it was like to be anybody but me.
Mm-hmm.
Whether to be a minority or to be a female or anything like that. And so that's what started to create the shift for me. I was a very staunch death penalty advocate. Kill somebody, we'll kill you back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started learning about the criminal justice system as I became more enlightened over the years. And it's like, oh shit, they get it wrong all the time.
Yeah.
If they're getting it wrong, we shouldn't be killing people. You shouldn't be giving them a punishment that you can't take back
mm-hmm.
when there's a good chance you got it wrong. And so that over the years caused me to really I like the word enlightened better than woke because
I think it's a lot better word.
It's a better word for a 40-year-old man.
to use. You know, and you say all that. Now, I grew up in a biracial family, mm-hmm. so I got to see a lot of the racism firsthand.
Right.
Which was strange because I grew up in a biracial family in a predominantly white middle-class neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to watch the way they would treat my stepfather and watch the way that people would treat my siblings,
mm-hmm.
which was much different than the way they would treat my mother. I think the big switch for me, though, was when I started tattooing. And I got into that tattoo culture and that tattoo community, and that is that very left-wing side. That
is it
very,
still?
It has shifted away from that. It has shifted more towards the libertarian, where kind of where I feel like I
not
fall.
Not doing a lot of MAGA tattoos?
No, yet? Not doing that. But but I feel like that was a big switch for me, is growing up in this very Republican area
uh-huh.
and then waking up in this world of, you know, traveling to LA, traveling to Chicago, tattooing right. in New Orleans, tattooing in all these places and mm-hmm. seeing different cultures and the way people perceive things. It that really enlightened me and woke me up.
And that's what it takes. Unfortunately, not everyone has the opportunity to experience things outside of their bubble.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely blessed that I had a podcast that took off and I had some great opportunities. Still to this day, don't know how I ended up in LA with John Cryer making a TV show. It's crazy. I've been extremely blessed and lucky. But there's a lot of people that don't ever get that opportunity.
Yeah.
And so that brings us to the why. Why we've talked a little bit about it as to why we want to do this. And it's because I'll speak for myself. I wanted to do this because I feel like our country, in the world too, but I can speak more about our country because that's where I live, has lost the ability to communicate. We've lost the ability to work
together.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is some quick Googling and find out just how dire the situation is. So I was doing a little bit of research, and I wanted to know what major accomplishments have happened in our country from our lawmakers that were bipartisan efforts.
Okay.
I mean, the two sides came together, worked together, got it done. And the first one you come across is in 1787, was what's known as the Great Compromise, which aptly named.
Yeah.
Which is our system of government. So the whole issue was, and it's still a debate today with the Electoral College. Quit looking at my notes. I saw you.
They're there. I need to know what's going on. I need to know what's going on.
But our system of government, as you can imagine, when we become a nation, there are certain states that are populated more heavily than others.
Mm-hmm.
And so the big argument was, so our Congress, should each state get a number of representatives based on their population, because there's more people, which is fair,
mm-hmm.
or should it be each state get the same number of representatives, which also seems fair.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another one of those issues, but this was a time when people were able to see both sides come together and come to an agreement. That's why we have the two houses of our Congress. So the Great Compromise in 1787 was there'll be two. There'll be a House of Representatives that's based on population. So there's 435 members in the House. And that's, you know, if a state has more people, they get more representatives in there. It's the weaker of the two houses. You know, the Senate is the stronger one of the two, and the Senate will be based on equality. So we have 100 senators, two senators for every state, doesn't matter how big or small you are. And so that was the Great Compromise. That's how our country was founded. That's how we started. Everything was a compromise.
Yeah.
And then as you move through time, then you get up to the 1860s with President Lincoln, who it was coined as his team of rivals. So back then, the parties, there was little factions in the parties. And almost like now, where you have all the kind of third party candidates running.
Yeah.
Lincoln was a Republican, and there were other factions of the Republican Party. There was, I think, three other people that were running against him as basically Republicans.
Okay.
And then, of course, the Democrats. So he gets elected. And when he gets elected, he puts all of them in his cabinet, all of his rivals for the election in his cabinet. And I have to read this off my screen because he had a good quote. He had told a reporter that he had no right to deprive the country of its strongest minds simply because they sometimes disagreed.
That's a great quote. That means a lot.
It does. And I think that's where we need to be. And, you know, there's been lots of other stuff. You know, Harry Truman in 1945, that his predecessor had appointed, started kind of stacking the Supreme Court with Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Truman's a Democrat. And he, for his first Supreme Court justice, he appoints a Republican Supreme Court justice as what he called an olive branch.
Mm-hmm.
He was wise enough to see that the divide was coming.
Yeah,
that people were getting upset because they're stacking and stacking and stacking, everything leaning towards one side, and that's when he's starting to create a lot of division. So he put someone that was more conservative minded in the Supreme Court to create that olive branch. But there's no greater one, and this was, I didn't know about this. I knew about the Civil Rights. I'm going to talk about the Civil Rights Act.
Okay.
So I knew about the Civil Rights Act. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
It was one of the most groundbreaking acts to ever come through our country. That's what gave African American people the right to own property.
Yeah.
And I learned about it because up where our cabin's at, we have a cabin up in Baldwin, Northern Michigan.
Yeah.
Near there is a town called Idlewild, and my dad told me about how when they were kids and they would be up in Baldwin camping, they would always go down to Jones's Ice Cream and take a ride through Idlewild to look at all the rich black people.
Okay.
Right.
Whoa.
Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Sammy Davis Jr. had a house there. I don't remember.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It was because Idlewild, Michigan, this tiny little town around this tiny little lake in Michigan, was one of two places in the entire country in the late 50s, early 60s, where African Americans were allowed to own property.
Wow.
Yeah. And so all these, anybody with money.
It's so disheartening, too, to think that, you know, you say the 50s and 60s. That's not that long ago.
Mm-mm. No, all the way until 1964.
Jesus.
And so in 1964, we passed the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
It changed all that, along with a lot of other things. And it was a hostile time in the country in the early 60s. People were starting to protest and riot. And, you know, I mean, imagine being one of these African-American people in that time. Like,
what the, I'm paying taxes. Mm-hmm. I'm working. I'm, you know, the slavery had been over for a while, but there were still hints of it, especially in the South.
Oh yeah.
And they're second class citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And so there starts to become this uprising. So in 1964, the Senate was comprised of a supermajority for the Democrats.
Okay.
So there were 67 Democrats, 33 Republicans, which means they could do anything.
Yeah.
You know, because if you have that, if you're over two thirds majority, that means if there's a filibuster or anything like that, if you have a two thirds majority, you can put a stop to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Democrats had that in the Senate. The Republicans are in the minority with only 33 people. So here comes the Civil Rights Act that was presented by a Democrat. The problem was 21 of those 67 Democrats were from Southern states and adamantly opposed the Civil Rights Act. So, you know, they thought they had the votes and they may have had the votes because a few Republicans were crossing over. And then the Southern Democrats did a filibuster. Or basically, I don't remember the exact details of how we're basically, as long as you can stay on the House, on the Senate floor and speak. You have the floor for as long as you want,
yeah.
And if you cross a certain time limit, they can't vote on the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the longest filibuster in the Senate history, was the Southern Democrats filibustering the Civil Rights Act.
That's crazy.
So the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat, goes to the Senate Minority Leader, Republican, and says, we need help. Something has to happen. The country is in turmoil. We can't stop them, these Southern Democrats, from stopping it. We need help. So the minority leader, Republican, addresses the Senate to all the Republican senators and says, we need to make a stand and we need to do something about this. The idea was just to stop the filibuster. Not only did they stop the filibuster when the Republicans joined them, but the Civil Rights Act was passed on June 10th, 1964, and the vote was 44 Democrats and 27 Republicans.
Out of the 33.
Yeah. And so the percentage-wise, that means 44 out of 67 Democrats, that's 65% of the Democrats, voted in favor, and 27 out of 33 Republicans, that's 81% of the Republicans, voted in favor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say anything about, you know, whether Republicans or Democrats are better. That's changed so much over the years. The point is, our world changed in 1964. Because both sides were willing to hear each other out and work together and make an incredible change.
Yeah.
And if you continue to go through history, there's more big ones. I mean, the creation of NASA, we put a man on the moon, the creation of the Endangered Species Act, the food stamp program in 83, the Social Security reform in 90, the Americans with Disabilities Act. These were all bipartisan bills.
Yeah.
Where both sides worked together. The list goes on and on and on until the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, things changed. The last time that I can think of that we were significantly united as a country was 9/11.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was only in the days and weeks following.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I talk about that. I talked about that on an episode of Made Us, that people forget what 9/12 was like, because 9/11 was when the incident happened. But that day after,
right,
September 12th, is when everybody came together and everybody were on the same page. You know, everybody was American at that point. There was no longer left or right. There was no black or white. It didn't matter. It was love.
American flags flying everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And but then things start to fall apart. And then I'm looking through, there's a few bipartisan bills that have passed since then, but nothing significant. There's been nothing for 20 years. We have not accomplished anything significant in a bipartisan way. You take, like, you know, a big change was the Affordable Care Act, which can be, Obamacare, which can be a whole nother episode in and of itself. But, you know, that was adamantly opposed by the Republicans and a lot of the people. There's, I'll tell you right now, just to give you a hint, because it affected me deeply. I think it was a terrible bill the way it was put forward. But imagine what could have happened if the two sides work together.
Mm-hmm.
All we see is constant battling back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so we're not 20 years. We haven't accomplished anything.
Nothing.
Nothing. And obviously there's little things that we've done along the way. The world's gotten better. It's gotten worse. Things happen. There's ebbs and flows. But the Civil Rights Act, that's power.
That is real
that
power.
That is world-changing power that happened because the two sides worked together.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't happened in decades. And it's getting further and further apart. I believe we're more divided now I was just reading an article the other day, and the quote I heard was somebody said, "Is this the most divided we've ever been?" And he reminded the audience of the Civil War, where, you know, we literally were divided and fighting each other. And he's like, "So we're not more divided than that, but we've never been this divided since then."
Yeah,
and it's hard to see an end in sight. And so then we start to ask ourselves why. The funny thing about this is Zach has no idea what I'm going to say, and I have no idea what he's going to say. But if you thought about why, what happened? What has happened since 2000 till 2019, say 99 to 2000, the last 20 years, what has happened to create the divide that we're in right now? And you can't say Trump, because I think Trump is a symptom of the divide.
I agree. Government overreach. You know, you have the government going in and pushing things. And I think, and I don't mean necessarily with people, but government overreach within media. And I think they, you know, they can push the media to say certain things. You know, look at stories on the news. Mm-hmm. You'll see a story on CNN and you'll see the same exact story on MSN.
Completely different.
That they're covering completely different.
Right.
And it's just, it's that push. You know, those parties are pushing their narrative, and I think that's what people feed into and believe. They don't want to read into things themselves, and they kind of push that, and they are divided more. But with that being said, I think there's a lot of people that aren't as divided as it seems. I think I think the media makes the divide look bigger than what it really is.
I think the media is a big part of creating the divide. I don't 100% disagree with you that the parties are pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's happening on its own. But it is. I mean, the news is not news anymore.
Mm-mm.
It's not. And I can tell you from someone who used to live on Fox News and then started living on CNN and MSNBC and now flips back and forth between both to witness exactly what you're talking about, that it's like, and the thing is, because we're divided, people choose their camp and that's the one they watch, you know, and it's incredible. You know, the border security is another thing we're going to talk about at some point. But I mean, like, I don't know if you guys know this, and a lot of you may not want to admit this, but it's fucking ridiculous. It is ridiculous because 100% when Obama was in office, the Democrats were in control, they were all preaching border wall.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what Biden said on stage in the debates, that half the pictures you see online of people in cages were during the Democrat year, the Obama years.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the Republicans were like, nope. We're not going to give you anything you want.
Yeah.
And now the Republicans are in party and they're saying we need a border wall. And the same people that were saying we don't back then, or that we did need it back then, are now saying, no, it's horrible. It's racist to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And look at you. You have people in cages. And the thing is, depending which news you're watching, if you watch Fox News, it'll show you all horrible things that happened during the Obama years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're watching CNN or MSNBC, they'll never mention the fact that the same people that are arguing against it now were arguing for it back then.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. All I'm saying is that's a good depiction of the divide we're in right now, where it doesn't matter what's right and wrong anymore. The only thing that matters is who's in power.
Yeah.
That you disagree with me on a fundamental level. Therefore, I disagree with you about everything.
Yeah.
And if that's the way we operated as individuals, we would never get anything done. You and I couldn't be friends.
No, you're right.
Because we disagree on a couple things.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the stuff we agree on.
Yeah.
You're a yes man, I heard once.
I heard that once, too. That was pretty upsetting. I'm still not totally over that, to be honest.
Ass is still chapped over that.
Still a little chapped on that one. But it is what it is. Yeah.
But you know what? I think what it really comes down to me, to me, what it really comes down to, it's what changed? What started happening around 2000? Social media.
Yeah, the social media.
Internet. In social media, and it's not just, so a couple things, and this is just my hypothesis, but a couple things happen. One.
So social media was really 2005-ish.
Right. So the internet becomes more popular in the late 2000s, and then we get into about 2005 and Facebook starts to become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
MySpace, remember MySpace?
Oh, yeah.
So people, first thing it did is it gave everyone a voice, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you and I are able to sit down right now and talk, and there's probably a couple of people listening right now.
Yeah.
We would never have that opportunity. So that's a good thing. But it also gave everyone with a phone or a computer the opportunity to state things as facts that aren't facts.
That's true. And people will believe whatever they read, which is disappointing.
Every damn meme on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, everybody believes.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I just had a friend of mine who's extremely left-wing liberal put up a post about socialism the other day. And it said, socialism isn't whatever. I don't remember. But it said, socialism is the government giving you the services that you paid for. And I was like, listen, I'm not saying if socialism is good or bad, but pretty sure that's not what socialism is.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure the people that didn't pay anything also. But it's just a funny anecdote. But the point is, it was on a meme, so it got posted, and people turn around and fucking repeat it.
Oh, yeah.
People repeat that shit. I've had people cite facts to me that are just bananas.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely false. And they're like, well, I don't know. I saw it on the internet.
Yeah.
But that's one thing is it gave everybody an opportunity to have a voice, which is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in that regard, the fact that President Trump is tweeting all the time.
Yeah.
There's a good part of that. There's a whole lot of bad that comes with that.
Oh, yeah.
That I absolutely hate. I mean, with him doing it, I wish he'd fucking stop.
Yeah.
Somebody take his phone from him. But I love the idea of, because we're talking about, right, the media that's just not reporting facts anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's swayed. To be able to hear directly, like imagine if when Obama was president,
mm-hmm.
or George W. or Clinton, whoever, Ronald Reagan, if they could just speak right to you whenever they wanted and tell you directly from their mouths or keyboards.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
That is cool.
There's a jackass doing it, you know, so that makes it, you know, not so cool. But it gives people the voice. But something I don't think a lot of us have thought of is the algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
That are built into social media.
Oh, yeah.
So we already tend to surround ourselves with people in our bubble,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially so when the political campaigns are going and now everybody's got a voice and everybody's saying whatever they want, posting their memes, doing whatever. And then so that people start unfriending people. I've had people unfriend me
mm-hmm.
for, you know, because I made some comment and I try to be as respectful as possible, but I'm like, wait a minute, that's not accurate.
Yeah.
That's not right. And they'll be like, well, F you, you're out. I'm unfriending you. You know, the ultimate insult. You can unfriend it on Facebook. But so we already sort of blend ourselves into this bubble of like-minded people. And then the algorithms that are a part of that social media.
When they take over, they really push it.
Right. And they're supposed to be doing a good thing, right?
Yeah.
We only want to, what Zuckerberg say? We want to put stuff in your newsfeed that's stuff you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're only showing you posts from people that agree with you.
Yeah.
Your bubble just gets even more tight and more closed off. And then people have some crazy ass idea. And they post it to the other crazy ass people in their bubble that the algorithm showed them,
mm-hmm.
and they get confirmation of it, and it gets validated by other people. And next thing you know, there's just these factions that a freaking algorithm created.
Yes,
and I'm not saying that's the whole problem, but I think it's a big part of the problem.
I think you're right. I wouldn't have thought that. I guess I wouldn't have. If I'd had time, I would have came up with that. But social media is the big thing with the algorithms, with all of that. That is a big push right on us.
Yeah. And I think it's made a significant change. I think it's had a significant impact. And I think so. And it's a whole chicken and egg thing, right? Stop looking at my notes.
I'm not looking at your notes. I'm looking at the clock.
I don't want you to. Oh, what time? Oh, you have to leave in 10 minutes, huh?
Well, I could probably push it to 2:30. So,
okay. Well, we're going to have to make this two episodes. So, okay, we were going to cover, because I want to finish this.
Okay.
And
this could be our intro episode.
Yeah. I wanted to finish this, for you guys, I wanted to finish this, I want to finish this topic about why we're doing this.
Yeah.
And then we actually had a topic we wanted to talk about today, but this will be the introduction episode. And we'll cover that topic next week. And I sort of lost my train of thought. But so that's kind of the why,
mm-hmm.
why I want to do this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's why you want to do it.
Yeah, I want to bring people together. Mm-hmm. Mine's a little less political.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I stay out of politics. I really try to stay out of politics.
Right.
Mine is a little less political. Mine is taking these issues that aren't necessarily politics. They're just these topics we talk about,
mm-hmm.
and showing people that there isn't, you know, there isn't one side or the other. It's not black and white.
Right.
There's a ton of area of gray, 50 shades of gray per se, mm-hmm. not the sexy kind.
Right.
But there's all this room in the middle to see each other's point of view, to understand that there are certain things that each party or each side of this conversation actually can bring to the table if you would just let each other. It's just listening and allowing
right,
each other.
Right, listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
That's a huge thing, is that key word of listening.
Right.
Listening to what the other person has to say. You don't necessarily have to dive in full force and understand or and believe what they have to say, but just listen to what they have to say and try to come to a resolution.
Right.
And I think that's what so many people don't want to do, is they don't want to open up to that other side of the story.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't mean to sound like everything I'm passionate about is politics. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a great...
Because I want to talk about shit like flat earth.
Right. And we're going to talk about everything. Aliens.
Yeah.
Area 51.
See, I'm all about it.
Whatever it is. So that, you know, I'm using politics as a great, you know, it's a great way to demonstrate what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't want to be, as a matter of fact, the first episode we want to do, we want to kind of get our feet wet with a true crime case, yeah, actually, that I find interesting. But that's really, for me, is what you said. It's all about opening a dialogue and communicating. You know, I spent 15 years as a firefighter. And as a fire chief for the last couple of years and an instructor, and I taught a lot of management classes. And that was one of the hardest things to teach people,
yeah,
was how to effectively communicate.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, when you and I are having a conversation, most people just watch, sit at a bar, watch, mm-hmm, people. You can see it in their eyes. The only thing they care about is convincing you of what they're saying. You're talking, they're not listening to words you're saying. All I'm doing is waiting for you to finish talking so I can start fucking talking again.
Exactly.
Yeah. And to try to teach people to communicate, no, you need to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, because it comes in all shapes, sizes, and forms.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire service is the same way. You know, we're trying to accomplish this goal. Here's one tactic. Here's another tactic. This person thinks whoever was doing this tactic, you're wrong and you're an idiot. And this person says you're wrong and you're an idiot. And they both have the mindset like the other person is trying to destroy them.
Yeah.
Or trying to sabotage the operation. And if they could just understand, we're both working towards the same goal. I happen to think this is the best way, and you happen to think that's the best way. Maybe one of us is right, or maybe the solution is somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
But we're never going to find out if we can't communicate.
A big thing for me that I've learned is listening, but also asking questions.
Yes.
Like questioning that part. And I don't mean questioning as in like aggressively questioning the other party, but just asking questions about why they feel that way.
We'll go back to the beginning of this episode. You know, you said you were libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Libertarian.
What does that mean?
And the question to me, the better question is the one I asked, which is, what does that mean to you?
Yes.
In the same way that if somebody asked me, I mean, in today's climate, I'm afraid to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody says, how do you identify yourself as far as when it comes to politics or religion? You're almost afraid to say, I consider myself to be a conservative Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't ever ask the question, what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
It's, nope, you're in the box over here.
Yep.
That is not tolerated.
You're wearing red right now.
Right. You're not tolerated. So we do have to wrap it up. Zach has to go too. But I want to play this real quick before we close things out for today. Did you catch what Ellen?
I caught the drift of it, that she was with George Bush at a football game. George W. Bush at a football game. As friends can do.
Right.
And she was being criticized for hanging out with...
Because there's a picture of her laughing with him.
Yeah.
And which I think is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
And she addressed it on her show. So you guys are hearing this probably a couple weeks after we record it. But Ellen addressed this on her show, what would be yesterday for us, which was Tuesday the 8th or something like that. And I just want you to hear a little bit of this, because I think what she has to say is really, really important.
When we were invited, I was aware that I was going to be surrounded with people from very different views and beliefs. And I'm not talking about politics. I was rooting for the Packers. And get this, everybody in the Cowboys suite was rooting for the Cowboys. And so I had to hide my cheese hat in Porsche's purse. And don't get me wrong. I like the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. I love all the Village people, as a matter of fact. But Aaron Rodgers is a friend of mine. He's the quarterback for the Packers, and so I'm sitting in the Cowboys suite, the owner of the Cowboys, and secretly cheering every time the Packers scored or every time another whistleblower came forward. And the referees, you guys, the referees. But during the game, they showed a shot of George and me laughing together, and so... People were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And, but a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. But here's one tweet that I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again. And exactly. Here's a the thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. For instance, I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur. And I'm friends with people who are furry, as a matter of fact. I have friends who should tweeze more. And I have... But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
Oh, that's awesome.
Isn't that awesome? That's incredible.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful statement. And that's exactly what it is just be kind to everyone. It doesn't matter what your beliefs are.
Right.
Like you and I can disagree. You and the person next to me can disagree.
Right.
I can disagree with them. It doesn't matter. We can still be friends. We can still be in the same room together.
Right. I 100% agree. And, you know, it's like my wife, Becky, says all the time, her very best friend in the world, her friend Crystal,
mm-hmm.
is a extreme left-wing liberal bordering on socialist atheist.
Okay.
And they're best friends.
Yeah.
They hang out all the time. And
nothing wrong with that.
So if Becky and Crystal can be best friends, and if Ellen DeGeneres and George W. Bush can be best friends, then I think that we can all come together and we can have a useful, meaningful conversation about whatever topic comes our way.
I absolutely agree. I think that's what this podcast is going to be about.
All right. We got to go, man.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. Make sure you tune in next week. We are, unless something crazy in the news happens between now and then, we're going to be discussing the Amber Geiger and Botham Jean case.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to get into this one.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So that'll be next week. We're going to be dropping every Wednesday morning from here on out. Thank you for listening. Zach, thanks for being my friend.
Love you, buddy.
Love you. Bob and Weave is an NBI Studios production, produced and edited by Mike Bussing, music by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. The artwork and our logo was created by Zach, and the video editing was done by me. You can connect with us on all forms of social media at Bob Weave Pod. And if you'd rather watch than listen, check out the Bob and Weave Podcast on YouTube. If you have any questions or a guest request, you can email us at contact@BobWeavePod.com. If you like the show, please take a minute to go on iTunes and rate and review us. On behalf of myself and Zach, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.